It's Tuesday, so it's time for College Football 134 to dive into the Week 8 that was and preview the Week 9 that will be before we look for some value for this coming weekend. That is Andrew Cayley. I am Douglas Farmer, and you know, Andrew, mid-October brings coach firings and drama and conference races, along with great chances to make money, sometimes in part because of those coach firings and drama and conference races. How are you this Tuesday?
Besides how the overall results went last week, which... Man, it's been a real roller coaster for me this season. Like, big hits, big misses. We'd like to find a little more stability going forward, but yeah, it's we're into that. Teams are quitting time more than ever, so this is a good time to be handicapping college football.
I will spend a good amount of time on the dredges of the country today. But before we get to those and before we get into the biggest storylines from the weekend, allow me to rattle off the key podcast verbs. Please, everyone, subscribe to College Football 134 on all your podcast platforms. Rate it, review it, like it, adore it, thank it, verbs, verbs, verbs. Anyway, let's look at the week eight that was, which I think we have to start off with the headliner. We have to talk about Georgia, Texas, Georgia winning 30-15. I'm going to do a little bit of a pat on the back here. I had the game state on that perfectly scripted. I just didn't expect Texas to have that much of a no-show in the first half.
Yeah, it was really crazy to see them get punched in the mouth as hard as they did and really didn't have much of a response to it. They had they made a good little push late there, but it felt too little too late. Like, this looked like, this is what I said going into the weekend. I was like, this doesn't look like a Georgia defense we've been used to, but they did in that game. They sacked them. They had seven sacks in that game. I think it was 11 pressures overall. Like, they dominated an offensive line that, once again, for my reason for picking Texas, was this is the best offensive line in the country. And Georgia made them look bad. So I don't know. Maybe Kirby Smart was just angry, and then we got angry Kirby Smart this weekend because That was a different team. That was not the team we saw play Alabama. This is not a team that we saw almost lose to Kentucky. It was a team to be fearful of going forward.
I think maybe the part of Kirby Smart that he most pulled from Nick Saban is angry, like you just mentioned. We're going to have angry Kirby Smart the rest of the year after, you know, you and I come on here and we're trying to make money. We try to have good picks. But what we love most about college football is how absurd it is, how just Looney Tunes it can so often be. And we have a whole new bit now. Hey, you know what you need to start doing with your losing bets? Just throw beer bottles on the field until they change the results for you.
That was one of the most, I don't think I've ever seen that before, where a flag has been picked up after a fan freak out like that. Usually those happens, the refs run off the field, the game is over, but never have I seen a flag picked up like that in that situation.
It really was handled poorly. I do believe enough that the refs huddled and like, wait, you called that on the defense? I meant it was offensive pass interference. Oh shoot. I believe that's probably what happened because that makes sense. That's what we all saw. Yeah. But for it to be handled such that they have that conversation while the replay is on the video board for half an hour, not half an hour, while the fans are all upset, not the greatest optics for the SEC in that moment. Not a great weekend for officiating in close moments of important sporting events. We'll just no. Say that one flat out.
Yeah, no, it was not great. And yeah, that said, though, it was just a tough day for Texas. I don't know. And then Quinn Ewers gets benched, and then he comes back into the game. So we get just another part of that craziness of college football. It's something I said would probably never happen. It doesn't matter how bad they were losing. And it happened. And then they went back to him. So now you've got this kind of weird quarterback situation there. And I'm not sure what Sark's going to do moving forward. I'm sure it's just going to be Ewers still 100% of the time, unless they're in a weird situation again, but I don't know. It felt icky. I don't know. It felt a little icky.
It to me is Ewers moving forward. I think in that exact moment alone, turning to Arch helped diffuse some of the defensive front pressure because Archie Manning is that much more mobile. He can produce with his legs. We saw him do it a couple of times. Whereas Quinn Ewers is a pocket presence. The way the Georgia defensive line was winning almost every single snap, you needed something to just disjoint that a touch. And that's why it made sense for a moment to go to Arch, who you and I both maintain is less of a quarterback right now than Quinn Ewers is.
And he can be, like we said, he can be one in the future, but at this point, like you said, less. But it just felt, it went against what Sark had kind of been saying heading into the game, and I think it creates some weird situations moving forward if they get into another tough spot down the line. Like, they've still got some tough games left on that schedule.
He has absolutely opened to that conversation to be had, which I think you would prefer not to have to acknowledge that.
Yeah, he tried to shut it down, and now he's not going to be able to shut it down anymore.
Now, elsewhere in the SEC, just as pivotal a game, in my opinion, Tennessee 24, Alabama 17. I think Alabama's on the ledge. I've been saying all year that a three-loss team doesn't make the playoff. Alabama, you've now got two losses. You are out of SEC contention, first of all. And you lose one more game. You've got a tough game this weekend. You've got LSU still. I'm pretty sure that's at LSU. Alabama, I'm a big Kalen DeBoer fan, but this is not setting up great.
It's tough. The game script for me this time kind of went as predicted. The best unit on the field looked like that Tennessee defense. Once again, they did a really, really good job of containing Jalen Milroe and Ryan Williams in this game. And hats off to Nico. He made a really, really impressive drive when that team needed it the most. And yeah, Tennessee deserved that win. Would they win that game if that game was played in Tuscaloosa? I'm not 100% sure, but hey, good on them on this one. And like you said, tough road here for Alabama, especially with the way that the SEC is playing out now. Let me bring it up real quick.
We've got it in front of me.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 6-1 teams overall. The only two undefeated teams left in the SEC in SEC play, which are Texas A&M and LSU. While Georgia, Tennessee, Missouri, Texas, Vanderbilt, our boy Diego Pavia, one loss. And it's a bit of a cluster in that conference right now.
It really is. When you started off at 6-1, I wondered why you were taking that approach, because you have to leave off Vanderbilt. No, there are seven teams in the SEC with 0 or 1 conference losses, including Vanderbilt, which it's just, yes, I want to include Vanderbilt in that conversation because it points out how much Bama's second loss matters. Having two losses with seven teams ahead of you now, it's going to be impossible to make the SEC title game. The piece of can you avoid a third loss is going to be a heck of a challenge. Because LSU's playing well, because Missouri's playing well, and Alabama's got to worry about them. Again, huge Kalen DeBoer fan. I suspect this coming offseason, not to jump through the rest of our season, this coming offseason, I will start pulling up a stat that I had last year, which is why I was high on Washington, of Kalen DeBoer's second season at every coaching stop he's had has been outstanding. And he's taken team like back in his FCS days, maybe they made the first round of the playoff. His second year, they won the title. It's going to be an argument I will have then of, Alabama, they went 8-4 or 9-3. Look out. He's going to really have something. But I'm saying I'm a big Kalen DeBoer backer. I think this year's cooked.
Yeah, it's a tough road for them for sure.
And there's one other game from last weekend that we need to highlight. It is starting to look like Miami might get away with it. Miami 52, Louisville 45. Now, Miami controlled this game. Miami was the better team in this game. Louisville was down 2 touchdowns with a minute to go. Like, I'm not trying to sit here and say this was a really close game. But it was a high-variance game with a lot of points and a lot of production, and Miami still got away with it. I think we can kind of assume Miami's going to go 12-0.
Yeah, I think so. With the remaining schedule and having Cam Ward at quarterback, he's the difference maker. He was the difference maker in that game on the weekend, and he will be moving forward. It's gonna make handicapping that an ACC title game if it's against Clemson very difficult, I would say, because unless you're immediately just gonna be like, I'm taking Clemson because we don't trust Mario Cristobal. I don't think we learned a whole lot about Miami other than I thought the defense underperformed in that game. I did not expect them to be in a shootout with Louisville by any by any sense of the word there. So I expected them to do a better job against that Louisville offense.
And that's probably further testament that we don't trust Mario. Your point there of the ACC championship game coming down to that simple of a handicap, I've been saying that since August. I published that in August of, yeah, Miami, I would put, I still am. I'm still putting Clemson right there in the 3 seed in my playoff bracket ahead of Miami. And people, Clemson's got a loss. Yeah, but Clemson's going to win the ACC championship game just because the first Saturday of December, who would you rather have, Dabo Sweeney or Mario Cristobal? And it's not
Dabo's got his faults, but that's not a question.
Dabo has faults 9 months of the year, but 3 months of the year, he's a really good football coach.
Yeah,
that's not. We don't need to be talking about December the whole show here, but that is. I really am starting to think we were right all along. I was right all along. You joined me pretty early in that argument. Louisville is a sham. Louisville's offense is a farce. But we have to admit, Mario is going to get away with it through November. It really seems that way.
It really does. Like you said, and the schedule really lightens up for them. So
that's our week 8. That was, I didn't pull a lot from the weekend to apply moving forward. I think Texas had a bad first half. I think Georgia. What I learned was Georgia's really, really, really good, but that might be the, thing that I don't have much else to pull from it.
I think that's the thing, right? We've seen some difficult results from them early in the season, not something that we're used to. And then you kind of forget sometimes that this is a roster full of guys who are going to be playing on Sundays and that's what they are. And if they get coached up, they're going to be a tough out.
We want to remind everyone that again, this weekend, they're making me get up early live on Saturday at 9 a.m. Eastern on the Covers YouTube channel and Twitter page. We will be previewing the entire Saturday slate. We're going to get to a few of the games of the week right now, one of which is before Saturday, and there's no question it needs to be included as a game of the week. But everyone, come back on Saturday morning and join us then. We will be sleep deprived because Boise State UNLV kicks off at 10:30 Eastern. So that's going to end at what? 1:30 in the morning, and we're on air at 9 a.m. Boy, I'm not going to sleep at all Friday night. Not that that's any different than usual. Boise State is currently a 3.5-point favorite at UNLV on Friday night, 10:30 Eastern on CBSSN. I have not bet this game, even if I am the world's loudest UNLV backer. I will take UNLV +4 if I see it. That number initially fell on Sunday as low as 1.5. It's climbed back up to that +3.5. But otherwise, I'm comfortable sitting here with my UNLV +650 to win the Mountain West. That's what I'm sitting on, and I'm okay with. If that's all I have come Friday night, I'll be okay with that.
Yeah, I was looking at my first gut was to look at the total here and maybe lean towards the under. I'd love to see it tick up a little bit. This is one of these spots where I might wait and see, because this is a weirdly public matchup now with the way UNLV has been public and the way that Ash and Jinty has put Boise on the map. So everyone's going to be like, oh yeah, there's going to be lots of points in this game. Not terrible run defenses for these teams.
UNLV's, I would say, is outright good.
Outright good. And when you're running the ball that much as these two teams are going to run the ball, obviously UNLV has found a little more balance, but they still run the ball at a pretty high rate. Like, much higher than most teams do. The clock's going to be moving a lot in this game. So 66 is a big number. I don't hate the under in this.
I want to push back on your thought that UNLV is running the ball much more often than everyone else. On the season, it is a 6.9% rush rate over expected. But much of that, I've been wrong. What was it? Through two games with Matthew Sluka, that was at 17%. So they've been dragging that down ever since that quarterback change. It's at this point, I think they're pretty much country average on how often they run in a given game state.
Let me pull up here the last. They still rush the ball 40 times against Oregon State.
But it's if they're getting themselves in a 2nd and 2 all the time, then yeah, they're going to run the ball. When I use that rush rate over expected from Parker, it's in a given game state, how often would an average team run the ball? I think UNLV is living right about the consistent expected numbers there.
So I'm just saying, like, even with that decrease with the switch at quarterback, I still think with the clock constantly moving and a number that is as high as it is, I think there's still going to be a little value on the under there.
And to your point, I should acknowledge sometimes a passing game is a running game. And while they're dropping back more often, they complete an absurd number of passes nowadays with Haj Malik Williams. And that keeps the clock moving just as much. I'm looking forward to that game. I've been riding with UNLV since August, obviously. We've seen Ashton Jeanty go against a good run defense just once this year. Oregon is number 13 in EPA against the rush. Oregon is a good run defense, but I do wonder if that was what, the second, third week of the season. Oregon did not quite understand the assignment yet, which hard to fault. As much as we were praising Ashton Jeanty before the season, we weren't expecting this. Now he's put up absurd numbers against teams like Utah State. I don't care what numbers you put up against Utah State. UNLV is number 20 in EPA per rush against, number 19 in rushing success rate against. I think this is going to be very curious to see if Ashton Jeanty can go for 180 again. Because if he can't go for 180, that starts to impact what we've seen from Boise State. And I realize that's a really big burden to put on anybody. Hey, if you don't run for 180 rushing yards, we're in trouble. But that's kind of what the Broncos have done this season. Since they made the quarterback decision they did back in the summer, we've all known this is going to be run first and run only.
Yeah. Also, interesting note here, everyone's been kind of like, hey, this is a preview of the Mountain West Championship game, but the loser of this game actually doesn't control their own destiny right off the bat there, because Colorado State, I believe, is undefeated still. As bad as they've looked at times, and if they were to win out, I know that it's probably unlikely, but it's still out of their control. It's still out of UNLV or Boise State's control if they lose this game. So it's not a sure thing into the Mountain West Championship game.
Are you in my outline, my personal outline? Because the last line I have on this is not likely but possible. You're coming very close to just exact verbiage. Let's rattle off New Mexico. Colorado State should win. At Nevada, Colorado State should win. Versus Wyoming, at Fresno, versus Utah State. Okay, so it's Wyoming and Fresno State. Colorado State, frankly, it's at Fresno State. Does Colorado State lose in that moment? Losing Torrey Horton at receiver lessens Colorado State, obviously. But yeah, they're putting together something, and you are correct that with neither of these teams facing Colorado State, it's quite possible this is our only Boise State-UNLV matchup of the year, which only furthers my +650 ticket, because here I have home field advantage on a Friday night, and I might not have to face Boise State again. I don't have to beat Boise State twice. I just have to beat them once.
That would be nice. That would be a nice thing for your ticket. I will say that.
reminder, folks, that's Friday night. And if for no other reason, Saturday morning, come back Saturday morning right at 9 a.m. to see how exhausted and or exhilarated we both are from that game. The Saturday slate is, as going to be the case this year more often than usual, highlighted by the SEC. Just the way that conference is panning out, 12-team playoff, more of these games matter. I'm not sure I'd care about Missouri at Alabama back in the 14 playoff era, but now that game is a huge factor. Frankly, it's probably just Alabama, you're out if you don't win. And Missouri, you're 6-1, but I don't know that you're going to have enough good wins if you lose this. Missouri is currently a 13.5 point underdog at Alabama, 3:30 Eastern time on ABC. I look at this, and Missouri, your defense is good, but it's nowhere near as good as that Tennessee defense you mentioned earlier. We've praised it much of the season. Missouri's defense is number 32 in EPA. Tennessee's is number 5. So Jalen Milroe should play better.
Yes, I think. That said, I saw the line, and it's not a best bet for me right now. Maybe we can talk about it again on Saturday. We'll see. But, geez, the way Alabama's played, like, 13.5 points, even at home, feels like a lot in this situation. The only thing holding me back is you just said it. Missouri's defense is good, but even what it is right now isn't as good as what I expected them to be. I expected this to be more like a dominant group, and they just kind of seem like okay at this point. Like they did okay. Like they did their job against Auburn. They did their job against UMass, obviously, and they got pushed around by Texas A&M. Like, Texas A&M literally pushed that defense around. So Alabama has the ability to do that. So that gives me my one fear. Milroe can obviously hit big plays, which is also what Texas A&M did against them. So a little hesitation, but just with the way that Alabama's played overall, still the same thing, right? Like, there's no consistency on offense. And if you can take away that big play, I don't know if Mizzou can do that, but I would lean towards taking the points at this point. That's a lot of points.
It's a lot of points. I have no confidence in Missouri in anything, which I don't think you're going to argue. You're pretty much saying this is too many points. You're not. It's more a bet that Alabama's not going to do enough. It's not that Missouri's good.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it – and yeah. That's what it would be. It would be like, can Alabama actually do what it's supposed to do in this game? And they haven't done enough in these games to this point to give me that confidence.
You know, two teams who have done enough, who at this point we have to acknowledge, they're the only unbeaten teams in the SEC. LSU at Texas A&M, 7:30 Eastern time on ABC. LSU, as of Tuesday, is a 2.5-point underdog. This game is obviously important. There's no reason that we have to just gin it up. The winner has pole position to make the SEC title game. That's absurd to say out loud. The loser is in perilous playoff position. The fact that both those things are true is wild. The risk reward of this game,
buddy.
College football, buddy, in the 12-team playoff era. Yeah, you've got either your front runner to make the SEC title game, or you're on the verge of out of the playoff. Brian Kelly, this is why you get $90 million guaranteed. Mike Elko, this is why the Texas A&M fans rebelled against the idea of Mark Stoops. This is those moments.
Yeah, and you know what? It's going to be a really fun game. This one almost made my list too. Another one that I want to see what the line does before we get to Saturday. But man, like, I was impressed. I was impressed by what LSU did against Arkansas. What I said heading into the week was like, I don't know what LSU is, right? Like, they hadn't done anything to show me that they were anything other than we have a good quarterback with a team that can't run. But now what did they do here against Arkansas? They rushed for almost 150 yards in that game. And I was like, oh, against an Arkansas defense that was supposed to be solid. And now over the last, I believe it's 4 weeks, they've given up 10 points, 26 points to what was the top-rated offense in the country at the time, at Mississippi, 10 points and 17 points. Like, they also held USC to 20 points, obviously, to open the year. But that defense is really coming around, which makes this team that much better. Obviously, this game is at Kyle Field, which is difficult, and we're seeing Texas A&M pretty much coming off their best win of the season as well. So that has me heading towards another, you know, there's another SEC first half under, right? Like, that's kind of where I'm leaning towards in this one as well. But like, that's not a solid bet yet. So we'll wait till Saturday to see where the line goes.
It is curious, Andrew, if I've been listening to you correctly today, you Boise State, UNLV, you thought about going to find the under 66.5. You're hoping to see it climb a little bit more, which is the biggest reason you have not played it yet. Missouri is a 13.5-point underdog. You're considering betting the Tigers there. Shoot, if that ever gets to 14, which it won't, you will be all over it. LSU plus 2.5 has your attention. You have come real close to betting each one of these games of the week, but you have not pulled the trigger on any of them. Do I have that right?
That is correct. But that's why we have a Saturday show, too. I want to evaluate the market, and then we can go from there.
Live at Saturday, 9 a.m. Eastern, before Week 9 kicks off. But that doesn't mean we don't have a bounty of value today on Tuesday. Close listeners, I usually hear say close listeners will notice we haven't suggested bets on all of these. Not even close listeners, because I just had to go through and make sure I was listening closely enough. No bets from us on the biggest games of the week, but we do have value to be found. I rallied last week with a vengeance.
You did.
My team, I went only 5-3 for plus 2.11 units, but my regrets were only one pick. UCLA kicked Rutgers Keister, easily crushed that team total of 17.5. I do not know what to make of the Bruins, but otherwise, my Georgia-Texas game script was spot on, even after that first half over fell short by a score. UNLV missed his team total by half a point. Woe is me. I will take a 5-3 showing for plus 2.11 units when I'm that on with the handicaps. That said, I'm still only 30-34, neg 6.2 on the year. The week zero over haunts me yet.
Yeah, at least it was better than me this week. It's been, like I said, it's been a hell of a roller coaster for me this year. Ups and downs, just 2-7 last week. So sorry about that, guys. We're going to try to bounce back this week. So that's, I think this, if this, the trend follows correctly, It's follow me this week and then fade me again in week 10, right? That's how we're going. I had a lot of wrong reads this week. That's what it felt like. Texas Tech is on my, they're in the bad list now. They've made the list after completely no showing against Baylor. West Virginia's defense, a complete no show, against Kansas State was a big shocker to me. A couple of tough beats, like the Cam Ward prop. He was at 308 with 12 minutes to go in the game and only got 9 more yards the rest of the way. That one was tough. But yeah, we will still move forward with the process. I've been really happy with it this year. And yeah, we're going to find some more value today and we're going to hit some winners this week.
We need to get two of these out early, right off the bat here, because we are both betting a Wednesday night game. So, folks, if you have made it this far, listen for another few more minutes before you pause for the week. And obviously, you'll listen to the rest of the show Thursday or Friday. We have two bets for Wednesday night. Why don't you start me off?
Yeah, and I'm going with this. I'm putting this in the show, and I'm calling it my midweek running back prop special because I put it on Twitter, and you guys said I cannot count it. So, we've got to get it in there. You can get frustrated all you want, Douglas, but it even was like I noted this was a college football 134 bet.
If
so we're now including it.
Don't hear the bet in time to place the bet. We can't.
We are growing this. Play. No, we are growing this community. I'm sure they were following. This is going to be a massive thing. Anyways, we're going to now include the midweek running back special, I think, for the rest of the week. And I'm going with Quinton Cooley of Liberty. We're going to take him on an alt rushing number of 125 plus rush yards. You can get that at plus 140 over at bet365. Cooley was already cooking heading into that FIU game, and they kind of just took the reins off him there and handed the ball to him 29 times. His previous high in a game this season was 29 against the Panthers for 174 yards. And I think he's primed for another big night against Kennesaw State. Our favorite Owls make another. We've talked a lot of Kennesaw State on this pod.
But it's never, maybe I was siding with them for a week to start the year. But when we talk about them now, it's always, yeah, Kennesaw State. Oof, Kennesaw State. It's almost like we're saying
129th in defensive success rate, 120th in EPA per rush. That ain't good. They bad. Cooley has topped 105 yards in 4 of his 5 games. And like I said, the 174 the last time out. I think he's primed to have another big night, and it'll just take a couple of big ones for him to get to that 125. I like the value at plus 140. So that's my fun midweek running back prop of the week.
I am here for all the bits, even if we are creating one known as the midweek running back prop special. I'm here for it. I'm always going to be here for a bit. What is not a bit is how bad Kennesaw State is. We are college football 134 because there are 134 teams in the country. We know there are 134 teams in the country because Kennesaw State is the 134th team in the country. They are the worst team in the country by most metrics, certainly overall. They are 3.2 points worse than number 132. To be more than a field goal worse than Akron is really just a damning way to look at somebody. It's the worst offense in the country. Liberty's defense hasn't been spectacular this season, but that's not going to be a worry against Kennesaw State, which is why I'm taking the Liberty first half line, -13.5 at Kennesaw State on Wednesday. That's -115 at BetMGM. The full game spread has just gotten big enough on me where Liberty has been disappointing this season that I don't trust Liberty to put together a full game. But they can go into halftime up 17-0. They can go into halftime up 24-7, and I will be counting my cash. Liberty first half, -13.5 at Kennesaw State. Again, both those plays are Wednesday night plays.
Yep. And yeah, I prefer that as well. They kind of let off the gas or whatever they did against FIU. They had much more problems with FIU than they should have. So I much prefer that first half bet from you there than the full game.
Speaking of first half bets.
Yes, first half. So now we've got another bet, our SEC first half play of the week. Like we said, it was almost that LSU Texas A&M game. But instead, we're going with Oklahoma and Mississippi under 26.5 in the first half, which you get at -120 over at FanDuel. Oklahoma's offense, they bad.
Hey, Andrew, how many quarterbacks does Oklahoma have?
They've got two.
So, Andrew, how many quarterbacks does Oklahoma have?
They've got none. They've got no quarterbacks. They rank 126th in success rate, 15 points or fewer in three of the last four games. Brent Venables is in a tough spot when it comes to that. They just fired the offensive coordinator. I think that's just a desperation move at this point. I don't see it getting much better at this point. And we're going up against a Mississippi defense that leads the country in defensive success rate. And we'll still give credit to Oklahoma's defense, 22nd success rate. Mississippi's offense has stalled a bit in SEC play. So once again, I feel like we're going to see a low scoring SEC first half here. Really like this play here, under 26.5 in the first half between Oklahoma and Mississippi.
Of my regrets in the year 2024, one of them is not digging my heels in stronger about how bad Oklahoma's offensive line is. I felt that way all summer, and I did not invest enough in that doubt. And I should have trusted my instincts, because as much as we're going to crack jokes about this quarterback situation, I think the biggest problem is undeniably that they don't have – was it last week I said it's a Colorado-esque offensive line? That's
– yes.
That's as costly of an insult as I can offer up about somebody's offensive front, and that's true of Oklahoma.
At least Colorado has guys who can catch the ball, too.
Well, you can't fault Oklahoma for running out of healthy receivers. It is very much just a health problem.
It's a statement of fact, though, that they're down five receivers.
Yeah, and Deion Burks, the Purdue transfer, was supposed to light the SEC on fire. They brought in quality there. They didn't bring in any quality in the offensive line. We could do a whole hour on the plight of Oklahoma. And the fact of the matter is Oklahoma does not matter enough right now to do a full hour on its debacle, on its tailspin. I would rather spend time talking about the MAC. I would rather spend time talking about a team grateful for Kennesaw State, because Kennesaw State is the only team worse than Kent State. Yes, I am here this week fading the number 133 team and the number 134 team in the country. And I'm doing them the same way. I'm going to take Western Michigan first half by 9.5. Now, there's an exact reason that I'm doing that with Kent State. Might be the second worst team in the country, a full half point better than Kennesaw. Congratulations. You're a half point better than Kennesaw State. Kennesaw State at least has functioning special teams. Kent State, nope, that's even bad. But the thing with Kent State is, depending when you got the numbers, my numbers in particular, 2 weeks ago, you got a nonsense cover against, let me make sure, Ball State. Remember that game, all the scoring in the last 3 or 4 minutes? Just stupid. It was just stupid to cover +3. Last week, I had Bowling Green 21. I got that early in the week. I had a beautiful number at close to 24. Kent State covered the number I had, pushed the number I had, losing 27-6. Covered against most people. And that's got me rather frustrated that twice now, Kent State has had just nonsense cover and then a push. So I'm going to get away from that. I'm going to take that 9.5 in the first half. In the last three games, Western Michigan has averaged 24.3 points in the first half. In the last three games, Kent State has averaged 9 points in the first half. I'll take those averages, 24-9. I win. It is a frustration of mine that Kent State has been not losing as much money as it should be, and I'm going to target a specific way to avoid that frustration this week.
I will also be looking at, hopefully, it's a little more rare that we get MAC player props, but I will be looking at Western Michigan running backs on Saturday morning for sure.
Yeah, I didn't write down what time that game is, but even if it's not there Saturday morning, go check back 2 hours before kick. Maybe you can get lucky.
Yeah. Well, check in with us on Saturday morning and we'll let you know.
Where are you going next?
Next, we're going to Indiana. Tough news for the Hoosiers this week. And before I hand injury, it sounds like, for quarterback Curtis Rourke.
Thumb
specifically. Okay. Early reports are that he could only miss maybe one game, which isn't terrible. But they've got a tough game this week against Washington, and I don't think that sportsbooks are valuing Rourke enough in this matchup. And I'm going to go with the under 53.5 between Washington and Indiana. These are two very solid defenses at this point. I think we're getting a bit of an inflated number too, for a secondary reason being that Washington's coming off that bad loss to Iowa where they gave up 40 points to that, once again, okay, not good Iowa offense. But Will Rogers had a bad game in that matchup and had a couple of costly turnovers. But the Washington defense, they still held Iowa to field goals on several. I think they held them to field goals on four of their drives, and three of those field goals were like 41 yards or shorter. So they tightened up in the red zone. Washington ranks 27th in defensive success rate. Like I said, Curtis Work doesn't play defense, luckily. Indiana 15th in defensive success rate. And overall, this is just a big, I think books are not valuing how good Curtis Rourke has been this season. And I don't think it can be cannot be properly lined at this point. And I'll take the under 53.5 in this game.
I agree with you on premise, especially because I went and looked, and if he was healthy, the total on this would be 54.5 maybe. So no, it hasn't moved enough. But I also am a firm believer in life of buy on bad news, sell on good. Now, the premise there is the world's going to overreact. And so the premise is like the spread in this game. If Curtis Work was healthy, it is north of 10. It opened at 6. I grabbed some Indiana at 6. It's now at 6.5. I was expecting the total to have a similar effect of the total gets pushed down to, let's say, 51 for this argument. Then I would want to come in and grab the over just because of an overreaction. So I agree with you on premise. I'm surprised there hasn't been as much of a reaction, which is why you're taking it. That's why you expected more of a reaction.
I expected more of an initial reaction, yeah, because I've looked up here and I've seen it open at 53.5, and that just number, like, I would have expected it to be in the 51 range almost, maybe even around 50, 49.5 sort of thing, because I really think he's that valuable to this Indiana offense. He's the engine that makes the move. He does his mobility combined with the way he can attack downfield has been the reason that this team is undefeated. And they're thinking like, hey, maybe we can be a sneaky playoff team at this point. And they need him at quarterback to do that.
But if it falls, I'm telling you now, that's when I will come in quickly on an over. If I see 49, I won't think twice. And that's just me always wanting to go contrarian to an overreaction.
For sure.
All right, I've got one more today. You are peppering the board with 5 total plays. I am pulling back with only 3. I have only 3. You have 5.
1, 2. No, you can't count, Douglas. It's okay.
Anyway. I am going to where we haven't been in a long while because they haven't played a football game there in a long while. This is Appalachian State's first home game since Hurricane Helene wrought damage everywhere around Boone. And that's not why I'm making this bet, but it does help me make this bet. I'm taking Appalachian State at 7 in the hook, 7.5 against Georgia State. Georgia State is bad, as you like to say, they bet. They're 1-4 against the spread against FBS teams, including 0-3 in their last 3, falling short of bookmakers' expectations by more than 12 points per game. I'm looking at this, and I'm seeing Appalachian State finally returning home in an emotional moment, one of the best home fields in the country, and they're getting a team that is bad. I have said it all season long that those 9 programs are to replace their head coaches in mid-January or later. They're struggling to meet expectations. It's because their rosters were decimated by the way the transfer portal is set up. In that moment, they lose players. They can't really replace them. Well, those 9 programs are 16-35 against the spread against FBS competition this season. Georgia State's one of those. I'm going to continue to fade those programs. I'm going to continue to fade Georgia State specifically. Again, 1-4 against the spread against the FBS teams, 0-3 in the last 3. And I'm going to gladly take Appalachian State at home for the first time since Hurricane Helene.
Okay, so I'm going to fight you a little bit on this one. I'm not going to make a play here. But so Georgia State, as a person who had a bet on AJ Turner last week, I watched 100% of Georgia State's game against Marshall. They probably should have covered the spread in that game. They gave an 88-yard touchdown run to Turner with less than 2 minutes to go, where they could have just, if they tackle him, then the clock runs out and the game is over and they cover the spread. They didn't tackle him because AJ Turner is awesome. but that happened. The other thing of note in that game is that Georgia State made a switch at quarterback to Zach Gibson, who went 19 for 32 for 192 yards, two touchdowns, and no interceptions in that game. So they felt like they found something in their backup in that game as well. And yeah, defensive success rate for App State. They bad, 124th in the country. So I'm not joining you on this one.
You don't have to join me. As history would show, when you don't join me, I'm better off.
There you go. There you go.
All right, you've got one more for us as we pull together this quick week.
Yes, for sure. Just so you know what a number is. Quentin Cooley is one. SEC under is two. Washington, Indiana is three. And Sunflower Showdown, Kansas, Kansas State, over 55 and a half is four, not five.
Are you proud of yourself? Are you happy?
I am.
Right now?
I am proud of myself. Avery Johnson coming off his best passing game, I would say, of his career. 19 for 28 for 298, three touchdowns, no picks last week in that beatdown of West Virginia in Morgantown. I didn't see, like, I thought Kansas State probably wins, but I didn't see it happening like that. So really impressive stuff from him. They've got 42, 31, and 45 points over the last three games, 3-0 to the over during that stretch. The Kansas defense has been giving up points. They ranked 98th in success rate. So I think Kansas State, the Wildcats, will still be able to move the ball well in this matchup. And we like to pick on Jalen Daniels every now and then on Saturday mornings in one of our other favorite bits. But to be fair, they've been scoring points the last 4 weeks as well. 28, 27, 31, and 42 points in their last four games. They've cashed the over in all four of those games. The offensive success rate is just 61st in the country right now, but I think feels like they've turned a bit of a corner. Obviously, Kansas State's defense will get after Daniels a little bit more here. I'm not expecting a Kansas upset by any means, but I think that they can do enough here. If they get three scores in this one, I think this one's going over.
I will let you know that Kansas State ranks in the top third of the country in interceptions with seven on the season, including five in the last 3 weeks.
So what are we going to say? Is it going to be the even one? Or are we going to get 1.5 for this?
It's going to be a 1.5 on Saturday.
Yeah.
How many interceptions will Jalen Daniels throw? Which, you know, they returned one for a touchdown last week. That would help in over concern.
Yeah, of course.
That is one of our recurring Saturday bits because I am a mean and vindictive individual. Before we recap those bets, yes, everyone, we are live on Saturday at 9 a.m. on the Covers YouTube and Twitter channels. But also, enjoy this Tuesday value. Like and subscribe to College Football 134 to show us you're getting the Tuesday value long before the show. Looking at our numbers here, I suspect the Liberty games are on Wednesday. I suspect that Washington, Indiana number should move before Saturday. And that Appalachian State number could also move before Saturday. Call that a hunch. I know we always have some of those come our way. And that's why the Tuesday show is, in my opinion, more important than the Saturday show.
Hey, Andrew, you're not wrong, bud.
Why don't you recap your bets? I'll recap mine and we will get out of here and enjoy the rest of Tuesday.
Let's start with the midweek running back prop special. Liberty running back Quentin Cooley, 125 plus rush yards at a nice plus 140. I'm also on Oklahoma, Mississippi under 26.5. And the first half, which is our SEC first half special, Washington, Indiana under 53.5, undervaluing the loss of Curtis Rourke there. And Kansas State over 55.5 in the Sunflower Showdown.
My bets for the week as of Tuesday: Liberty first half by 13.5 at Kennesaw State on Wednesday. Western Michigan first half by 9.5 against Kent State. Yes, I'm fading the two worst teams in the country. And Appalachian State's return home to the Rock, win by 7.5 against Georgia State. I think that does it for us in a nice and tidy 45 minutes. That is Andrew Cayley at Covers_Cayley. I am Douglas Farmer at D_Farmer.